From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Nandi. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter with NBC4 and a columnist with the Current Newspapers. Tom Sherwood, welcome.
Good afternoon.
And joining us in studio is Muriel Bowser. She is the mayor of the District of Columbia. She is a Democrat who has just announced that she will be running for re-election. Mayor Bowser, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kojo.
Good luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now the pleasantries are out of the way.
Exactly right. We'll get to the tough stuff later on. There's another announcement that I'd like to make about what the mayor is doing that, for me, is much more important from a personal standpoint than the fact that she's running for mayor again. And that is, I saw on the website DCRTV this week that the Washington, D.C. government has launched D.C. Radio, an online D.C. at online at dcradio.gov. It will feature information about what's happening in the district, community affairs shows, emergency information, along with a weekly program hosted by Mayor Muriel Bowser. What's up with this? You're running for mayor again. You can't want to be a radio talk show host, too. We already got that covered here.
Well, we certainly do have it covered here at WAMU. Of course, you know, American University is my alma mater, and I greatly love coming here. But we also have the opportunity to reach even more people, Kojo, on our new DC radio station, where there will be just a lot of information about programs and services. You know, we do a lot of great things in the government, and people, believe it or not, tell us time in and time out that they don't know about the program. So this is a way to connect to them.
Well, just very briefly about that. So how will you access this radio? Is it on a radio dial? Is it online radio?
Yes, it is a...
Very quickly for us.
They're using the leased HD4 digital subchannel of Howard University's WHUR 96.3, my former employer. Programming is coming from D.C.'s Office of Cable Television, Film, Music, and Entertainment.
Okay, good.
Yes, and you know that agency also runs our public channels, Channel 13 for the council, 16 for the executive, and our knowledge network that serves D.C. public schools.
If you have questions or comments for Mayor Bowser, you can start calling now, 800-433-8850. If you have denunciations, you can also call. You can also tweet us at Kojo Show, email to kojo@wamu.org, or go to our website, kojoshow.org, and watch the live video stream of the broadcast. Ask a question or comment there. Tom Sherwood, I know that you were on hand for the latest gubernatorial debate in Virginia between Messrs. Gillespie and Northam, both aspiring to be governor of the state. What's your takeaway?
I was all fired up to ask the mayor the first question about her campaign. But anyway, I will take away. Tuesday night, Channel 4 did a live one-hour debate with Ralph Northam and Ed Gillespie, the candidates for governor in Virginia. The Trump factor was a big deal because, you know, Ed Gillespie has been doing very much what Larry Hogan has been doing in Maryland, which is trying to not let the Trump world slosh over on him, but it's very difficult to do in Virginia. The Democrats are doing their classic campaign. They want to run up the score in Northern Virginia. They want to do well in the Hampton Roads, Norfolk area, where Ralph Northam is from, and they want to carry their voters in Roanoke and far southwest. Republicans want everything else. The question is turnout again. There's a lot of uncertainty. African Americans, there's a good significant number of African Americans in the state who are not yet weighed in on who they're going to vote for. They tend to obviously be Democratic, but it's one thing to be for someone. It's another to go out and vote. So the question is, it's said to be a close race. We just won't know. You got to turn out the vote. The Democrats are working hard to do that, but so are the Republicans.
Mayor Bowser, do you have a candidate in this race? Are you favoring either Northam or Gillespie?
Well, obviously, we're focused on our own race right here in Washington, D.C. I was very proud to announce today and I want to, first of all, thank all of the residents of the District of Columbia.
She's
who
not
have,
picking a horse in that race.
Well,
so she's gonna be for the
Democrat. I have a horse, and it's Dr. Northam. And we want all the Democrats in Virginia to go out and vote for him. It's very important that the things that are important in our Democratic platform are pushed in Virginia.
We will be talking with you at great length about your campaign plans today, but one more issue before we get there, and that is Maryland Governor Larry Hogan has proposed expanding the Beltway 270 and the Baltimore-Washington Parkway, four lanes added to each one of those highways. However, those lanes will be tolled express lanes, and people will have to pay to ride them, but it will promise a faster commute for those who are coming to the district to work and those who are going back home. Is that a plan that you would approve of?
We think that it's better to focus on how to move people out of single-occupant vehicles, invest in public transportation so that it can serve the entire region for years to come. What we know about expanding roads is that more people will drive. If they plan on coming into the district from Maryland or Virginia, they're going to come into the same existing road network. And so the smart money is on investing in public transit.
Well, you know, the city is like building the new South Capitol Street Bridge to ease some of the traffic into and out of the city, but that's not adding lots of lanes. That's just redoing the lanes that exist. But, you know, if you have all these new lanes, it's a $9 billion plan, and who knows if all of it will be done. But the governor, what's happening here is the governor is running for reelection, and he is blunting all the criticisms that he's getting from Democrats that he doesn't care about this region. You know, he went along finally with the Purple Line. He's done a number of issues. He's supporting the FBI building still in Prince George's. He's competing for Amazon. But this plan, think of these four more lanes on the Beltway that go to the American Legion Bridge. Where the heck are those, and I say that politely, are those cars, vehicles going to go? They can't all go into George Washington Memorial Parkway, and they can't all come into our city. It's going to be quite the thing we needed. This is just the beginning of this, just as he's proposing the Chesapeake Bay Bridge. There's lots of things works.
There's going to be a region-wide debate, and there's going to be a political debate in Maryland. But, of course, Tom Shore likes to say this is the politics
hour. Right.
So, Mayor Bowser, let's talk politics. You have announced that you will be running again. In an interview recently, you said something that you have voiced in the past. You are consistently underestimated. Why do you think that is? And now that you're mayor of the District of Columbia with pretty decent ratings, do you think that's still the case?
Well, we're very proud of the vote of confidence that residents have given us. I hear it when we go out into community meetings across the city that they think the government is operating well. I've hired a great team of competent leaders. We have a plan, and we're delivering quality services.
So who's underestimating you?
Well, you read those articles, and the same articles, they always question how strong I'll be, if we're going to get the job done as mayor. We'll be strong on a regional and national scale. And it's always been my job just to work harder, work smarter, and demonstrate to people that I'm the leader for the city.
Let the record show that I was among the first to underestimate Muriel Bowser many years ago when she first considered running for mayor, and I suggested that another political official who shall remain nameless, but let's say he's the longest standing on the city council, had wider name recognition than she did. Apparently, I turned out to be wrong.
Again.
Never again.
Well, Mayor, let's talk about this because, you know, you announced in 2013 for your term, and you ran hard. There was Mayor Gray, who was a potential nominee this time, thinks that his reelection was partially taken away by that federal scandal into his reelection campaign of 2010. I mean, this is the first election. I want to ask about you. You stood out from your parents' home, I think, when you announced the last
time. I did.
Just very quickly, have you filed papers to run, or are you about to file them?
We'll file them today.
And do you have an announcement? Are you going to have a big kickoff thing so people can put it on their calendar either for or against you?
We definitely will get out into the city and have a lot of events, small ones and big ones, and we will announce them as the fall comes on.
I want to ask about you and your coverage. I read Paul Schwartzman's interview in the Washington Post, too, but here's what I was – just who you are, because two people have underestimated you to their peril. But I've heard this. I did a big survey of people over the last few days, and this is what I heard about you personally as being the mayor, that if you win reelection, there are two things that could happen. It could reinforce your attitude of being less tolerant of some people who disagree with you, that if you disagree with you, you're wrong. You remember your first year in office, I asked you on another radio station, you want your way 100%, and your response was, I do. don't know if you remember that or not.
Everybody, Tom, who's, go ahead.
Okay, let me just, I would lay this out, because the second half of it is good, is that they're concerned that you will be even more difficult to deal with because you are adamant about getting your way. Another person said just this morning, who deals extensively with you, oh, no, I think what's going to happen is the mayor has gained much more confidence in the last 4 years, and that she wins re-election, she will relax a little, and that she will be more inclusive with council members who are not always easy to get along with, and that actually you'll make a much better mayor in a second term. Which is it?
Well, I'll take issue with a couple of your questions.
I'm just characterizing what people said. I haven't given my personal opinion.
All right. So my view is that I certainly work hard every day to work with a lot of constituencies. And when almost two-thirds of the people say that you're working well with our neighborhood or you're really good on our issue and our initiatives, that means that we are doing the type of outreach that wins people's support. And we have to continue to do that. The council's no different. I have submitted 3 balanced budgets to the council, scads of nominees to boards and commissions into cabinet positions. And I would venture to say that we're together with the council members 9 out of 10 times that we go and work on a particular issue. I think that I have certainly grown in my role. One thing that I have committed to is not every fight is not an equal fight. And so if there is an opportunity to give a little on this program or on this piece of funding, then I always look for ways to do that.
And, for example, the council chairman, Phil Mendelson, who can be his own personal pill sometimes to take in terms of his attitude. I keep hearing that you guys have this weekly lunch or whatever it is, but you cancel or he cancels or you have it and you don't speak that well with each other. You cussed at him once, I think, last spring or whenever that was. What is the relationship with the council? There's a lot of big issues coming again, including paid family leave and other issues where, you know, things need to be done. Your personal relationship with the council members. Say, people say Brandon Todd from Ward 4 is the only solid in your corner council member out of all 13.
Well, my job is to advance policies to the council, to present budgets to the council, run the government, and execute the law. And that's exactly what we do. And I work with all the council members to do that. I wouldn't be able to have 3 balanced budgets that funded all of our initiatives.
You have to have a balanced budget by law.
They don't have to approve the things that are important to us, and they do. And so that's been very important to us. So I think, quite frankly, Tom, that you spend a little too much time worried about
personalities,
how nice we are in meetings. What you should be concerned with is how effective we are with working together. And the truth is, I had a meeting with Phil this week, I had one last week, and I had one the week before that.
Did you speak?
Of course we speak.
Let the record show that Tom Sherwood just got lectured to.
No, yes. She didn't. No, see, that you said that with some sense of good humor, but you were disagreeing with me.
Yes.
But others say,
teacher, lecturer,
and student. Others complain that you can be very, as opposed to being tough, you can be really tough when people disagree with you, unlike what you just did with me.
Well, Tom, I think what
is that a sexist thing some people think?
We shouldn't spend too much time waiting on how tough you think I am. Let's talk about the issues that the people of the district.
Well,
of you Columbia get.
Well, Tom likes about. To say I'm this just, is the politics house. Well, so let's no, continue
can
to talk politics.
I just finish this one thought, though?
Yes, sir.
I think there is a sexism to it when you're tough. Some people, for women particularly, we saw that with Hillary Clinton, that a tough woman is somehow not being appropriate. And I want to make it clear that that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about willingness to bend in issues and compromising, not some personal attitude of yours.
Right. And
that's a big distinction.
I wouldn't be as effective I am as we have been in moving our policies if we didn't make compromises.
Let's talk politics. There's been a lot of speculation about next year's mayoral race. We know Attorney General Carl Racine will not be running, but former Mayor Vincent Gray sounds like he is planning to run. Is that a rematch that you would look forward to? This time he won't have the liability of being under investigation for anything. He's convinced that that is what torpedoed his last campaign. Is that a rematch that you would be looking forward to?
Well, Coach, this is going to be my sixth campaign, and every one of them I've been contested. Even in my last mayoral race, I had a competitive primary and a competitive general election. So my approach to any campaign is to run hard and prepare for any and all challengers.
Well, go ahead, Tom.
Well, you have the good benefit, and you'll take credit for doing some of this, in that the economy is doing well, the city's growing city. Crime is down citywide, although there are problems with some crime in some parts of the region. That it's all doing pretty well. But some of the folks, the D.C. Physical Policy Institute and other groups, are saying the city is booming, that despite whatever efforts you've done so far, the least of these are not being taken care of. There's concerns about income inequality, which is across the nation a problem.
Absolutely.
But housing cost, it's even a proposal now. I saw that the child care workers are going to have associate college degrees before they can take care of children, and that's going to bump a lot of people out of jobs, senior citizens who have these jobs taking care of children. There's not enough sensitivity. Despite your rhetoric, and I don't mean rhetoric in a bad way, about trying to bring a grocery store to Southeast, trying to get a hospital or some kind of medical care going in Southeast, that the least of these are not benefiting from the booming city that you oversee.
Well, we knew all of these issues when I ran for mayor and I launched my campaign back in 2014. Housing was a central issue then, and that's why when the first thing I committed to in coming to office in my first budget, in my second budget, and in my third budget was doubling the amount of investments that the city puts into affordable housing. When I became mayor, we were investing about $50 million in the Housing Production Trust Fund, and we've been able to double that. So in 2.5 years, we have either created, preserved, or put in to the pipeline 8,000 units. And so what I know we can do in the next term, because we have committed to that type of investment, the ability to get the money out of the door and spent on units has improved. I know that we will be able to create, preserve, or put in the pipeline 10,000 units. And that's critical to how the city moves forward.
Our guest is Muriel Bowser, mayor of the District of Columbia. She's a Democrat who has just announced that she is running for re-election. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter with NBC4 and a columnist with the Current Newspapers. You just answered a question from Tom about homelessness. Steve in Washington, D.C. had a similar question. Let's see if Steve is satisfied with your answer. Steve, you are on the air. Did you hear what the mayor just had to say? Did that answer your question?
I did hear, and I recognize that homelessness is a chronic problem in all major cities, and it's a deeply challenging one. It's not just people without homes, a lot of mental illness. Today was a good example. Walking down 19th Street to an appointment, I watched as people trying to get into their office building were blocked by three homeless people who had essentially commandeered an Adirondack chair that was put out in the courtyard for the workers in the building, and a little village had been assembled in front of the entrance. They couldn't get into their building. And down the street at the 7-Eleven, a woman had set up her milk crate literally in front of the door. And 2 hours later, it was still there. So the question is not, what are you going to do about it? I would ask this. What have you learned about the challenges of homelessness that you hope to apply in your second term?
Well, that's thank you, Steve, for that question. And you are right. It is a tough issue, but it is one that we have willingly taken on. I made some very strong pronouncements at the beginning of our term about how we would end family homelessness and close D.C. General, and made significant investments in transforming our homeless services system. Part of our problem is our system has become a waiting line for affordable housing. So what it has been clogged and unable to deal with emergencies. What Steve is referring to and the people, our residents that Steve is referring to, are some of our most challenged who are living on the street, many of whom refuse to go into shelter that is available to them. And so we have to work very hard, and we have. We We put our mental health counselors out on the street, on street teams, to help bring people in where we can. We have moved, and we will continue to move encampments because we know they're not safe for residents living in the encampments or the residents who encounter the encampments. So we've worked very hard on that. One of the things that we've learned is that we have to move people through our emergency system faster. And working with property owners, working with landlords is a pinch point for where we are, because we can even put a voucher in someone's hand that will give them access to housing. And we cannot find a property owner that's willing to rent to them. So that's one thing that we've learned. The second thing is that our most challenged residents, they need to be walked through the entire process. We just can't give them a voucher. We have to literally walk them through every step until they are in the safe and affordable housing.
There is one part of that process that seems to have run into an obstacle before the council this week. Your plan to put homeless shelters across the city. D.C. is only one of three jurisdictions with a right to shelter law. The council delayed a vote on a bill this week, saying it wants more discussion on the bill because that bill would require, your proposal would require, two documents provided proving residency for those seeking a spot in a shelter. Advocates feel that standard may be too high. What would you like to see happen there?
Well, you are right to point out, Kojo, that we are different in our region, that we are the only jurisdiction where there is a right, an entitlement to shelter during the winter months. So you don't often hear about homelessness in Montgomery County or in any place in Virginia, because they don't have the same law that we do. So our law requires that if you present to us and you say you're homeless, then we have to put you in one of our shelters. If we have no more shelter space, we rent out hotel space at significant cost to the district. What I have been asking the council, actually, we started talking about this more than a year ago, and we're almost up upon hypothermia season again, is that we have to be sure that we are serving D.C. residents. If we are serving the whole region, then there are D.C. residents who won't be served.
Well, one of the political issues that you have faced this past year is putting homeless apartments, not shelters, but apartments, in all eight wards so that the region, the city, will share the burden of housing homeless folks so that they can get back on their feet. But that was some complaints when that first started, that you had some of your developer supporters were going to benefit from that. It was all worked out, and it's now being going forward. But other issues in the first term, you had Fresh Pack for a while, where you were going to start a political action committee called Fresh Pack. And then there's been a big to-do over the Department of General Services and the awarding of contracts and developers being favored and all of that. Of those, what have you, like the last caller on homelessness, what have you learned in terms of dealing with people, developers who want to help the city, but also you have to be wary that they're not politically favored?
Well, what we do is what we do with anybody who seeks to do business with the district. We have procurement processes in place, and so anybody who wants to work with the district has to follow those processes. And it's the professionals in each of those departments, whether you mentioned DGS, who is also responsible for building our short-term family housing, they make the decisions related to who they're going to work with according to their contracting vehicles.
Does the public understand what happened to Admiral Weaver, who was there but left, and there was all this kerfuffle and long interview investigation by Councilmember Che? Everything is political. Is it free enough of politics because it handles so many hundreds of millions of dollars in activity?
Yes. The professionals and the departments have to follow the procurement policies of the department and of the government and make decisions based on what's best for the district. Absolutely. And so we, to your earlier point, we certainly gave and answered a lot of questions from the council, all the questions that they had. Even though it was a non-committee or non-council report, there was a report issued.
You were asking, can I do one more ethics issue and then I'll be done with that?
Yeah, I have one too.
Oh, good. Well,
you go ahead first.
When you were a council member, you helped rewrite some of the city's ethics laws. You had several bills. You made them into one, and that was a good thing, making progress. Many people, though, think that the city's ethics monitoring and laws are still weak. Charles Allen, the Ward 6 council member, is now working on a new bill. Do you think the Office of Campaign Finance should be restructured, that the reporting requirements should be changed so there's more transparency, more sunlight, more understanding of what political activities are going on in terms of campaign finance monies? It seems to be
sunlight,
a mess over
there. All sunlight is always good.
Do you have any new proposals? I think you have some that are in this mix that Charles Allen is dealing with.
Well, the big thing is, so let me kind of step back to your earlier question. I was very proud to author the district's most recent ethics law that created the Board of Ethics and Government Accountability. Mm-hmm. And so I think, and I can say, having seen it operate for the last several years now, that taxpayers and residents of the District of Columbia should feel very good about how that board is operating. The training that goes across all of the employees, having the ability to ask for advice when there is a question about any activity an employee might engage in. And they have enforced the rules. So I feel very good about where that is. And to your later
campaign
point
finance.
About the Office of Campaign Finance, during that same period of time, it was a lot going on the council at that time, you might recall. There were several council members who were in various stages of trouble. And what I did then was give the Office of Campaign Finance, through my committee work, an additional $1 million where they hired additional staff, auditors, and accountants, and they had the ability then to do more campaign work. Where I see some lack between campaigns and the Office of Campaign Finance is technology. And I think that they have to either upgrade the technology on their end. So a lot of the errors that you're finding where campaign officials and candidates want to do the right thing and are trying to do the right thing and have made an error, the Office of Campaign Finance has also missed those errors. I think that there is a fix in technology. For my campaign,
the laws are good. Excuse me for interrupting. The laws are good. You just think administratively it should be done better.
I think that we have some, especially if you compare us to the rest of this region, we have some pretty strong campaign finance rules. We have limits, for example.
I'm laughing because you compare that to
a lot of people want to get in on this conversation.
Wild West. Virginia has no laws.
So I wanted to finish the point, and that is you mentioned it correctly, in my view, that sunshine and disclosure is very important to the process. So anything that we can do to make information more readily and easily available to voters makes the system better.
Here is Sam in D.C. Sam, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, Mayor.
Hi.
How are you?
Great.
I'm a new business owner in D.C. and like to make a few comments. So it took me about a year to get my permits to open a restaurant on 14th Street. And by the way, you're invited on Monday at 11 o'clock.
Okay.
And also Kojo. and everybody else who is listening. I was wondering...
Tom's not invited. Go ahead.
No, get to the point.
We used a third-party inspection, and it went very well and was very fast. I was wondering if in the future that could be changed so you have a third-party inspection actually doing the permitting, the whole process. This would make our life much easier as a business owner.
Well, thank you for opening your business, first of all. And it sounds like you're going to hire some D.C. residents and be another great option on 14th Street for folks. Our point is to always make things faster and easier at DCRA. DCRA is a tough agency for a couple of reasons. I told the staff there that it's the agency that makes you do stuff. It's also the agency that charges you sometimes hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars. $5 to do it, and it also makes you wait. So there is always going to be some friction between how fast we can do things because they have to follow all the rules and regulations. So over the years, we have tried to come up, as Sam has mentioned, with ways to expedite the process. And so we still make that available. We're looking for other ways in the review as well as the permitting process to add a third party option to do that as well. I've also asked the director to have a more direct link to the property owners who are seeking the permits, so you know every step of the way where your permit stands.
Thank you very much for your call, Sam. A report from the D.C. auditor this week cited millions in taxes and fines the district is losing each year for failing to crack down on vacant and blighted property. We got a Facebook question from John. Why are you destroying old Anacostia through demolition by neglect of city-owned properties, specifically the 1400 block of W Street Southeast?
Good. I would love to fix it. We actually have a contract. We had a contract out last year. We picked a development partner to work on those houses. And now we're going to need to work through a solution with the council.
But the larger question is the 2,000 vacant blighted properties in the city, which are taxed at a higher rate, but you have to know that they're vacant and blighted to do so. And the DCRA, this, once again, DCRA, maybe that agency needs to be broken up. It's not. It says it's going to do a better job. It's trying. But there are lots of properties that are blights on the neighborhood that aren't fixed. And you see them as you drive around town.
Well, I love having this conversation because, you know, you asked what people know about me earlier, and what people know is I was advisory neighborhood commissioner, I was a ward council member, and now I'm mayor. And so in a lot of ways, I still have the heart of the ward and council member at ANC and me, and the blight and abandoned property issue has been one that I've been working on. Some people may not know that I authored the law that actually created the system that we have that charges more through a tax assessment for a vacant property, significantly more, and even more, twice that, for a blighted property.
If it's enforced.
And I got to say, and if you would be fair and look back to all of the years that it's been in place, that many more properties have been moved into productive use because of that law. So what else do we have to do to make sure each property, and I haven't looked at the auditor's report in detail. I think it was about a year at the beginning of our term. And I think her report also demonstrated that some of the changes that have been put in place will make the system work better. So I don't know what the difference has been since October of 2015 to now, but I've got to think that if that report was updated, it would demonstrate much improvement.
I wanted to get back to the contracting issue that Tom raised earlier. You hired a consulting firm, Veritas, to address some of the issues at United Medical Center. But a Washington Post investigation found that a no-bid contract had gone to this major donor to your mayoral campaign. What do you say to critics who feel that it's another contract under your watch that doesn't seem to pass the so-called smell test?
Well, I think it does pass the smell test. First of all, the contract was issued by the United Medical Center Board, who has the responsibility for the hospital. My director of healthcare finance did make the recommendation to the board for that contract.
And defended it on this broadcast.
And he made it because he thought it was the best consultant who could start the soonest for the best value. So that's the recommendation that he made. We stand behind it. And
he said no bid contracts are the norm in the hospital turnaround business.
That may be true, and he is better able to speak to that. Usually, and it was, I can speak for this case, we were in a situation where the hospital and the board couldn't pay its bill. We were concerned about them making payroll. We couldn't get a labor contract certified, and we knew that we had to also pay them a subsidy so that they could keep certain lines of business open. So what they've been able to do since they've had a consultant is get the finances right. But that's only part of the issue at the United Medical Center, I think you know. And so we have spent our time trying to get the hospital stabilized so that we can attract a partner. So the type of work we're doing around the hospital now, I announced the location for a new hospital on the eastern side of the city. We're also working with another consultant to help us really identify the lines of service that really need the investment and where we and how we need to invest in the new hospital. I hope to get a report from them. But what we need, this is not about real estate and it's not about consultants. It's about making sure that we have built not just the hospital, but a whole system of care that will attract residents of Ward 7 and 8 back to a hospital on the eastern side of the city.
We have about 17 minutes left. You should know that we are swamped with phone calls, emails, and tweets. So let's please try to keep our questions and our responses as brief as possible.
All right, quick question. Transportation, my big issue.
Yes.
We're a growing city. Hundreds of thousands of people come in every day. Leif Dormsjö, your former director of transportation, sat right there a couple of weeks ago and said you're working on a plan to make better use of the curb lane in our city so there's fewer parking problems, fewer double parking by delivery trucks, et cetera, et cetera. I looked at your plan that you put out in the last week for what's going to go forward. I didn't see a transportation matter on those two pages of items for the council. But what was Leif Dormsjö talking about? What can we expect? Traffic, as you know, is a big irritation everywhere.
Yeah, so you're right to point out that we have more and more people who live here, but we don't have more and more car lanes. So we have to, the best way to make the best use of our car lanes is to have great bus services that put more people on the bus. We, for example, added this year a 14th Street Express bus lane. We will be ready to implement a bus-only lane on 16th Street as well. And we are intent on using our D.C. circulator buses to better serve D.C. residents.
Very quickly, the curb lane, though,
the curb lane,
you are going to have a proposal.
And we have had a proposal, and we put it in our 2018 budget. We didn't get it all funded. Part of that proposal is making sure that we have more tow trucks. Okay. And I asked my team, probably prompted by one of your tweets, to say, why aren't we moving this? And the best example we have to keep all car lanes clear is 8th Street Northeast. The same program that we put in place to keep vehicles from blocking the streetcar, we need on more of our major thoroughfares. We know what that package of people and vehicles is that's needed to do ticketing and towing to keep the lanes clear.
Go to education next, and I'll take two calls at the same time or one immediately after the other. First, you, Morton in Northeast. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. I don't understand how somebody who ran on a platform of good government and ethics can allow the school lottery to be manipulated so blatantly and have this on top of so many other issues. Some of which have been talked about over the course of this program.
Well, actually, let me jump in and answer.
Hold on
your
a second, Norton. Hold on a second. You're not going anyplace. You'll just respond to the first part.
So, but the question was, and did we run on a campaign to give the district a fresh start? And we certainly did. And that's exactly what people across Washington, D.C. are telling us. There is a confidence in our government, it's a confidence in how the government is running, and there is significant pride in Washington, D.C. I think the caller is right to say that government officials and the public should know that government officials are not getting a shortcut to the front of the line for any service, and especially not for schools. We put a new policy in place. There had never been one at DCPS. And by the way, we're not talking about the lottery. Okay, these placements had nothing to do with the lottery. It was a chancellor's discretionary placement, and there had been no rules for it. Now there are rules for it. And in addition to that, government officials, public officials, will not be able to ask the chancellor for a discretionary placement. It's been prohibited.
Morton, your turn.
I mean, you can call it what you want. You can say that there was no policy. Everybody understood that the lottery was equal.
Let me correct you again, Morton. Let me correct you again. We're not talking about the lottery here. As I said, we're not talking about the lottery. What you're referring to was the chancellor's discretionary placement. And we put in place rules and prohibited public officials from being able to ask for that discretionary placement.
One more shot, Morton. Morton, are you there?
Right, and I want to put the lottery issue in the context of everything else she's done. Fresh Tack, a fresh start for the city. Fresh Tack was an opportunity for you to reward your donors.
Well, there's a campaign coming up, Martin, and you'll have more than enough opportunity during the course of
campaign.
To criticize the mayor on a variety of issues. I wanted to stick with education for a second, so please allow me to go to Samuel in Washington, D.C., who's been waiting for a while. Samuel identifies as a public school student at Woodrow Wilson High School. Samuel, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I'm a junior at Wilson, and thanks for having me on the air, but I was wondering, as Wilson's student body continues to increase, the per-student funding has been decreasing, and I just don't really understand what's going on and why we've had to cut art programs, and we have one counselor per grade, and some of them are being cut as well. So,
what's going on with Woodrow
Wilson? Well, Wilson, actually, the student body is not growing. And it was we kept the number down over the last 2 years, probably 40 or 50 students. And our young person is quite right that the student funding follows the students. So if you have fewer students, you'll have fewer funds. Having said that, I asked Chancellor Wilson to work with Principal Martin at Wilson to make sure there was some concern, I believe, about a counselor's position, an administrative position, and an art position, all of which are included in Wilson's budget.
Tom?
We got to talk about crime. The good news for you and the city and the president.
Good news for all of us.
That's when I tried to be inclusive there, is that the overall crime statistics are down, and there are still random shootings like there are in any place in America. But what more can be done about the crime pockets? Peter Newsom is the police chief. He knows the whole city. You pick somebody who's a veteran of the police department. But there are still people in parts of our city who are fearful of their children playing outside. Drug dealing that would not occur on Connecticut Avenue certainly occurs on those streets. I was just on 8th Street, as much as that is, and the person said to me, go two blocks down to, I think it's like 3rd and 8th or whatever. There's an open drug market there during the afternoons. What about crime in general? Yes, the statistics look good, but for the people who are involved with victims of crime, it doesn't feel too good.
No, and certainly it does feel good if you've had a family member or a neighbor or a friend that has been hurt in our city in any way. And those are the most violent crimes. Property crimes don't help with a feeling of safety either. And I think it is all of our jobs to make sure that no matter where crime is happening, that the full force of our government is around fixing it. Now, some of those issues are policing issues. Others, increasingly, probably more, are human services issues and how we can make sure that people have opportunities and that they're not involved in crime. We're grateful, however, that we see all of our homicide rates going down, robbery significantly down, burglary down, and those are the types of statistics we want to talk about. If there was one single thing that I would that we can focus on, especially in our most troubled areas for violence, and that's guns. And it's going to sound like a broken record, but a lot of the violence, especially the shooting violence and the homicides that we have seen, have started out with petty arguments, petty disagreements that but for the presence of the gun would not have ended as violently as it did. So we are going to continue to work with our police department on how we get illegal guns off the street.
The other side of that coin comes in the form of a tweet from No Justice, No Pride. If Mayor Bowser wants our votes, we need to take urgent action to address D.C.'s policing problems. Presumably that means that this is an individual who feels that police themselves are the source of some of the problems we have in our city.
Well, we know this, that we the balance between policing and community engagement and the trust between police and community is a fragile one. And so we invest in that good relationship each and every day in the things that we do. Our administration has been about making those interactions more transparent. We launched at the time, it was one of the biggest body-worn cameras summer programs in the nation. That footage is widely available according to our rules. We have an independent police complaints board where citizens can go separate and apart from police internal investigations. Complaints can be made, and they are thoroughly investigated by the police complaints board. We also have a police chief who knows this city, who knows police officers and managing police officers, and who I only hired because he demonstrated and he emphatically said that he's committed to constitutional policing. So when we look at our department, is it perfect? Can I assure you that we will have a cop that never makes a mistake? I can't do that. But I can assure you that we're going to hold all of our folks accountable.
Facebook question from True. In our city, trans women, especially trans women of color, face daily harassment, violence, and criminalization, often at the hands of police officers and city employees. What will you do as mayor to address this and to make D.C. a safe and affirming place for trans women?
Well, trans women are targets of violence in our city all the time, and I'm not sure if all residents know that, but they are targets of harassment and violence and have been victims of homicide. And I want to make clear that we expect everybody, and neighborhoods demand it as well, as follows the law, but no one should be treated disrespectfully.
But very quickly on policing, I saw the Chief Newsom this week advertise for police officers on Twitter to come join us. Other organizations, Fairfax County, lots of places. Do we have the strength of the police department? I've forgotten what the authorized number is, but I think we're always 300 or 400 below it. Are we making progress in getting people into the police department?
Yes.
As opposed to having all these vacancies, which causes overtime, lack of coverage. You know that story.
Well, we need to always be recruiting and hiring police officers.
Do they have to be 2 years of college, is that really necessary?
60 credits,
is that really necessary?
We like the qualifications that we have. We think that we have some age qualifications, education qualifications, which lead to the type of maturity that one needs to have a badge and a gun.
Can I mention Metro here? This is an important thing.
I want to get to business, too, but go ahead quickly.
Metro is the spine of this region. It's falling apart. The new 7,000, just this week, yesterday, the 7,000 cars, turns out they have some kind of electrical brush or something that has to be replaced on all the new cars. It seems to me that if we want to do the whole region from Baltimore to Philadelphia, it seems that our transportation system in Metro, what's the answer? You support the 1% sales tax. Governor Hogan has proposed a $500 million contribution. It's really not that much money in the grand scheme of things. Where is the answer to Metro so this region continues to grow? Some people say we're starting to slip behind other regions in the country.
Well, the answer is, just like other regions, we need a dedicated source of revenue that Metro can rely on for its maintenance and growth. We are an outlier in the nation in that we do not have a dedicated funding source. And so that is my belief, that all of the area and jurisdictions that participate in the Metro Compact are going to have to step up, and we're going to have that dedicated source of funding. What's different from what's been proposed in Maryland, just adding money from year to year, you can't leverage that money to borrow more money.
Right.
And that's what Metro needs, at least $1.5 billion a year that they can spend on the fixes that Metro needs. So the bottom line is that leaders like me and my counterparts in Maryland and Virginia, we can kick the can down the road. But we've been here. And my disappointment in the state's not coming along right now is just that we have a real opportunity. It could be, you know, we're going into an election year. You could have three new players next year. You could have one new player. But all that changes the dynamic of our discussion. So that's why we have been in the district so we have a sense of urgency about getting to a decision sooner than later.
If I were Amazon, I would be worried about coming to this region. My
work, and I'm going to ask about Amazon in a second, but the D.C. Council may be pulling back after passing a series of progressive bills on the minimum wage and paid family leave. Council Chair Phil Mendelson proposed a moratorium for a while on such legislation, saying it's making it difficult to do business in the district. Do you agree?
Well, I think that we've worked really hard on improving our business reputation. I don't have to remind some of you how business people used to talk about the district. Some of them still say the same things. But in the last year, we were able to pass and put into law a bill that raises the minimum wage. We started out talking about how people were falling behind in our city, a city that is booming and growing so fast. So raising the minimum wage gradually to get to $15 an hour, which I fully supported and pushed and worked with labor unions and the council to get done, will help keep more people able to afford to live in the District of Columbia. I'm not on the council, so I will tread lightly, but I've never heard of having a moratorium on laws.
Well, I guess it gets everyone past the 2018 elections.
You made your pitch to Amazon, including a video with a cute moment asking Alexa, Amazon's virtual assistant, where Amazon will locate, and she replies, obviously D.C. Why obviously D.C.?
Well, this is what we know, and we haven't made our pitch yet. We're starting to work on it, and we will. The proposal is due, I think, mid-October, and we'll send it in. What we know is that Amazon is looking for a talented workforce, livable, walkable cities. I think that they are attracted to, their workers are attracted to areas that have great museums and parks and the ability to get around without a car. And so we think that it makes a lot of sense.
Well, 1 second. That's all you have. 1 second.
That's it.
No, go ahead.
No.
You got a minute.
Well, just Amazon, you know, Governor Hogan is pitching the area around Baltimore. Sharon Baker, running for governor, is pitching, of course, Prince George's County. Governor McAuliffe is pitching Virginia. If I were Jeff Bezos and I was looking to put my, I would say, I'm not going to a region like this place that cannot get its transportation settled. Whether you're talking about roads blocked or metros, we've discussed all those things. It doesn't seem to be very inviting.
Well, actually, I think that we compare well against a lot of metropolitan areas on the things that you discussed and the things that Amazon is looking for, and the region compares well. And so we know that we're going to make a strong case. The thing that I promise is that we're going to be around every table and fight for the district.
Can I ask one NAS?
No, this next question you can answer in one word. Do the mayor and the D.C. Council have a plan B for D.C. residents in case the ACA is destroyed by the latest Republican proposal?
We will. We will be able, and certainly Wayne Turnage was here to talk to you about it. We have many of our folks that were part of the expanded Medicaid program, and we will want to seek to have them covered.
Muriel Bowes is mayor of the District of Columbia. She's a Democrat. She has just announced that she's running for re-election. Thank you for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter with NBC4 and a columnist with the Current newspapers. That's it for the show today, but we are gearing up for a busy week. You can join us in person Tuesday night for the next edition of Koju in Your Community. We'll be having a conversation about what it means for our region's colleges and universities to create safe spaces on campus. That's at Bus Boys and Poets in Hydesville, September 26th. Thanks to our visitors from Alice Steele today, and thank you for listening. I'm Koju Nambi.
The Koju Nambi Show is produced by Michael Martinez, Ingelisa Schrobsdorf, Ruth Tam, Mark Gunnery, and Avery Kleiman. The engineer is Meg Bunting. Podcasts of all shows and audio archives are available at our website, kojoshow.org.